Let's see if we can make this thing work. It is the news, I think, according to me. Hey, it is Friday, July 7th. 17th, I'm sorry. July 17th. Left a one off. It was the one that was a big one. Anyway, it's kind of subdued here this morning. My voice is kind of... air quality in Indiana right now is very bad. It's nothing compared to Michigan, and it's nothing compared to some of the other places around the country. It is 8:12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am here, your host, telling you what I think about the news. We have... today's Financial Friday. We're going to be talking about some financial stuff today. I think my voice and my sinuses kind of taking a beating anyway because of all the rain and mildew and everything that was in the air all over the place. And now we've got the smoke on top of it. It's just been quite the mess from what I've experienced. I was in Boston the other day on Wednesday. First, I had heard about the Canadian fire. I guess it's fires from Canada again. Canadian. That's what I call it. If I can call it that. Wow. I just didn't do my mouth stretches this morning. I guess exercises. Get those old muscles limbered up so you can talk a little bit. We have got a pretty good show for you. I think today we've got a little few things lined up. In the queue here, one of which is a little audio thing within the thing. I wonder if I can do that. That won't let me do that. So I just don't want to worry about it. Anyway, I've got this LN, what is it? Notebook LM. Has a way where you can put some videos in there. And I don't know what it did this morning. It did some weird stuff this morning. It kind of has this other thing on the back. There's three. I've only put two things in there, but it's got three in it. I don't know why. The other one's just spinning. It's not doing something, weird. I also have a notebook. I did have a notebook LM desktop version, and I don't know what happened to that. It's all of a sudden it's become, now it's called Gemini Notebook or something. It's Gemini Notebook instead of being Notebook LM, which I think Google bought it. I think it was like a side thing to Google, whatever it was. Anyway, what I'm trying to say here is some stuff. It's Financial Friday. We're going to be talking about some financial stuff today. We're going to have a little podcast within the podcast talking about these videos here. Once your portfolio hits this amount. You know, there's a thing about whether or not when your portfolio gets to a certain point, your additions to it don't really matter anymore. If you're not drawing from it, your additions to it really don't matter too much anymore because it's growing exponentially on its own. I don't know about that. I think that may be the case. You can get a portfolio that does that, and then what you want to do maybe I should get to my disclaimer before I start saying anything further, because we're going to talk about that kind of stuff. I think that's where we're going to go with this. I have a couple of things that I can't remember which disclaimer I played for you yesterday. I'm gonna play a different one today. Because there's several. I think I'll play the shorter one today. Not sure how I'm gonna do that, but I don't know. Well, then I'll play this one. This is the one where I'm just gonna randomly choose one. I'm gonna reach up there and just push on whatever button happens to play. Here we go. In my cup. Here we go. It's in my cup. The exciting part of the day is what's in my cup. I have Almond Joy creamer in my chai this morning. So I can get my mouth or. A little hot. It's in an insulated covered cup, and it's a little hot. In my backup cup, it's pretty exciting this morning. I have last evening I made some sweet peach tea, homemade sweet peach tea with real peaches in it. It's that's pretty good stuff right there. Yeah, that's tasting good. It's going to be good, especially by tomorrow. Over the weekend, it's going to be like at its peak. By the time I get ready to go to work on Sunday, I'll be able to fill my thermos with some perfectly good sweet peach tea, just for my enjoyment getting to work. Anyway, that's what I got going on. We'll come back after this brief. We're going to call it brief. That's what we'll call it, brief little interlude here. While you sit back, relax, fill your coffee cup up, make sure it's nice and warm while you listen to this little ditty as we call. Oh, that's loud.
Woke up this morning, got something to say, but before I say it, let me clear the air today. I'm just a person with a microphone and a thought, not a doctor, not a lawyer, and I sure ain't got a lot. These are opinions, just opinions, baby, not advice, not a diagnosis, not a legal brief. If you take my words to court, well, I'm gonna plead not guilty, because I told you this is just for me. I got no license on the wall, no letters after my name. I do my research, sure I do, but it ain't quite the same. Your portfolio, your symptoms, and your contract dispute need someone way more qualified, and that ain't me, boo. For entertainment only, that's the bottom line. Come back and listen, have a laugh, everything's fine. But if something's wrong with your health or your finances too, please, for the love of all things good, don't just ask me what to do.
Yeah. That's a good ending on it. That's the one you want to hear. That's something you want to hear right away in the morning. We have a few callers on the line. We got the Aussie who's going to chime in with some political question. I typed it in myself. All this stuff is AI generated. I should say all the stuff from the podcast caller. I don't have an advertiser. I don't have a sponsor, as you will. There's no. It's sponsored by me. I pay for everything, including the podcast caller. I spent money to build it and host it. It is online right now, podcastcaller.com. It's the closest thing I have to a sponsor, and it's not really a sponsor. It's a tool I use, so I explain what it is. And there's going to be more additions to it as the weekend goes here, before the end of the week, hopefully before the weekend is up. I'll be able to work on some things here with this. But we've got five callers today from the podcast caller. So what this is that the AI agentic agents, they call in, so to speak. I push on the button when they pop up on the thing there. It depends on what I'm talking about. They can go to the top of the queue. So depending on what I'm mentioning, they slide around over there. But I can click on any one of them that I want to. So we'll see what happens here this morning. What I do is I also have their questions AI generated by a different AI agent. So I sneak around that way. This thing doesn't loop on itself. I have another agent that's kind of scours the internet and certain resources that I have given it permission to look at, to gather some information, so that it goes out there in the interwebs, finds that information, then it comes up with questions related to the topic of the day. Then it sends me an email every morning at 5 a.m. with all these questions on it. I have another agent that just moves them over to the app. So I have no idea. Sometimes I have no idea what's going to be on. Sometimes I do. I'm able to read them, but a lot of times I'll just move it over there and just I have no idea what we're going to get into. I push on the button. So sometimes they surprise me with some questions The brain of the news, according to me, highly trained professional brain that I am. They come in with something that I have no idea. Again, I think my voice is getting kind of rough this morning. I it's uh, It doesn't have that smooth, silky sound that I normally have. A lot of that's just because of the air quality. Because Canada's on fire, apparently. I think I talked about that earlier, but it's literally hazy. I think it's supposed to rain today here, and that's going to hopefully help. Normally, when you have this much particulate in the air, when it's this humid and you have particulate in the air, it usually causes some storms. I'm kind of surprised that yesterday I was able to get the whole yard mowed yesterday. It was, not the whole thing. I got a little bit of push mowing to do in the back here. But we've got about 7 acres, and we mow about four of it, three and a half. And it takes a couple hours to do it. I didn't even do the trails. I haven't even gotten the trails aren't really even finished this year. I was kind of hoping to get the trails done. It just hasn't happened yet. I've got some vacation coming up, and, of course, that's when everything's going to get done, supposedly. It never does. But I have the feeling this vacation is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to have some time to do some things, and we're going to do some camping and do some sailing as well. But it's going to be a productive time, I think. I hope. I'm hoping I can get some things done. I'm going to have almost a month off of work, so I'll forget everything about how to do. When I go back to my job, I will forget everything. I'm sure I'll have no idea what I'm doing. I feel like I'm just kind of getting into the groove. I've only been there about 3 years, 3.5 years, 4 years, this particular job. And I just feel like I'm just kind of starting to get the hang of it. But, and then I retire next year. So it's about time to get to my pinnacle, my peak. I think they're going to boot me out. It's a mandatory retirement of 65 in this particular position I'm in. So it's a crazy world out there. We have, Let's just go down the list here. We got Elena here up at the beginning. Let's just talk to the archivist, the historian. Let's see what she has to throw into the mix. Make sure I turn the volume up here before I get started.
Good afternoon, Kevin.
Yes, hello. That was quick.
With all the news about Connecticut barring nativity displays in the state capitol too religious.
No, that's not, we're not going to do that. We're not doing that. I thought I changed. Did I not save it? So this was from yesterday. I recognize it from yesterday. Let's go to... Yeah, that didn't change for some reason there. stand by. Listen to this little ditty while I fix this. See what...
But wait, there's more. 651, we're almost done. 76 and 85, text that number, it's alive. Text that number, call that number, don't be a loser.
Yeah, I'm back. Well, I think apparently I did not push the save button when I changed Elena there. Let's see if it works better this time. See what we end up with here. What you got there for me, Elena?
Good morning, Kevin.
Hello. Yes.
I've been reading about the national debt hitting $39.4 trillion as of yesterday, and it reminded me of the lead-up to every major economic collapse in history. Rome, Weimar, Germany, even the British Empire's decline. We keep hearing, this time is different because we're the reserve currency, but hasn't every empire in decline said the same thing? Where are we really in this historical cycle?
Yes. To short answer, yes. In terms of, when you ask the question, is every empire decline? They have said the same thing. They've stuck their head in the sand. They've kicked the can down the road. They continue to do it. And our politicians are doing this. Nobody wants to be at the helm when things fall apart. So they just keep on kicking it down to the neck. They want to, they look at the situation and go, this is insurmountable. Let's just keep it moving. Now, the whole idea, their trick in the past has been that, the debt isn't that big because inflation, we've got all this money borrowed, $39 trillion today, when that's going to be the average income of the American people are going to, your average income per year is going to be $1 trillion. Doesn't seem like 39 trillion is that much if we can just devalue the dollar to the point that, you know, you're getting $1 million an hour for work. It doesn't make sense. So that's their whole idea is that over time, that the value of the dollar goes down, and so it's easier for when they print a dollar, it's easier that 39 trillion doesn't mean as much because it's not as big of a deal. Back when we were, you know, when our GDP was based on a much smaller amount, I can remember when you know, my dad, I think at one point he was making, I think it was $15,000 or $16,000 a year. This was back in the 70s. Early 70s, he got this new job, and he was making $17,000 or $18,000 a year. Now, that's nothing. Now, that's a part-time job. Now, he was looking. He was going to pay cash for a Cadillac. He had brochures. He was looking at Cadillacs. He was going to buy an airplane. He was looking at a Cessna. He had Cessna 150 and a Cessna 172. He was going to buy a brand new airplane. That's kind of that's the state of our economy back then. You look at a brand new single engine airplane now. It's 10 times the price it was. Actually, more than that. You're talking $250,000 just for a single engine piston engine airplane in most cases. Ridiculous. It's a ridiculous amount of money. And in my opinion, they're trying to play this long game. The problem is they just continue to add to the debt and they're hoping that at some point now, supposedly this time we've got this, all this infrastructure being built. We've got this economy that's going to turn around. We've got things that are going to change. And the whole tariff thing, the way they've been able to go negotiate some of those things, the income from that, all this other stuff that they're talking about. They're actually talking about being able to eliminate income taxes on the common individual. I think they'll probably do it on personal individuals. They won't do it on businesses, but they will do it on, which is ridiculous. But the way they're going to, I don't know. I'm glad they're going to get rid of something at least. Personal income tax is fine. People will find ways to loop around that. But it's an interesting time. But yes, I am concerned about it. I am very concerned about it. And I don't think that we, you know what? I didn't even start the microphone. So Elena has not heard me say anything. Yeah, Elena, sorry, I've been talking and you haven't been able to listen to anything I've been saying. So, I've been talking about how they're planning on monetizing the debt. Basically, it's as the value of the dollar goes down, they're hoping that $39 trillion doesn't mean anything anymore. Is what amounts to. You didn't hear my whole story about my dad in the airplane. So, but anyway, he lost that job, by the way. Before he didn't buy any of those things. He lost the job before that company went belly up. Not because they were paying too much money to the workers. It was just it was an industry thing. It was just a weird deal. But he had finally arrived, and then the arrival went away. But that's what happens with the money. So they're hoping they can kick this can down the road. I don't know if it's going to, you know, like I said, the tariffs and all the stuff that's happening with the negotiations and everything that's happening. I don't know if it's going to change anything or not, but. We'll see. We'll see how she responds to this, since she wasn't really listening to anything I said. I'll take a sip. Go ahead.
You're right. I came in late. I didn't catch the story about your dad. And honestly, the audio's been spotty on my end.
Oh, well.
But I'm hearing you on the debt monetization angle.
Okay.
And that tracks with what we've seen historically when currencies face pressure. Governments have always had to make those uncomfortable choices about what debt actually means in real terms. Sorry to hear about your dad's situation with that company, though. Ah. Those industry-wide collapses hit different than just bad management.
And my dad turned out just fine, but that's it's just all part of life. And that's the way it goes. You see, it's a learning thing, and you kind of learn things occasionally. But so yeah, I'm concerned about our debt, and I don't, it just seems like the nobody goes to Washington to fix it, or they say they're going to fix it and they don't. That's what's very probably the most frustrating thing, I think, with much of this situation. Nobody wants to face it. Nobody wants to kick it down. They don't want to kick it down the road and not be in charge when the thing has to fall apart. At some point, we're going to have some kind of major income to pay that $39 trillion. I think the last I heard, every single individual, if you take 320 million people that we have in the country, and you divide that all up to pay off the debt, it's going to cost us $150,000 or $160,000 per individual. Probably more than that now, actually. That's every man, woman, baby, child, everybody, in the country. That's the kind of debt they have on their head right now. If we all wrote a check, every single individual in the country wrote a check right now to pay down the debt, that's what it would take. And when you stop and think about that, not everybody has that kind of money, obviously. Vast majority do not have that kind of money. I would say 90% of the people in the country don't have that kind of money. Where's it going to come from? So it's one of those things where we're in a tight situation, tough situation. Now there's money out there. And of course, the government can just print money. The problem is that devalues our money. That's what they do. They print it, but it devalues a dollar. So it's just, we've gone over this before, in ad infinitum and in infinitum, whatever. Infinitely gone over this. Yeah, so that's where we're at. Let's go to the skeptic. I just feel like listening from the skeptic this morning. I get kind of tired of this. I might change his voice. I just get kind of tired hearing his voice, but it's, we're going to do it. Here we go. This is Artie. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Kev.
Yeah,
quick
hey.
Technical question.
Oh, this isn't
the
skeptic.
I saw the IRS just raise the business mileage deduction rate because of fuel price surges. But when I crunch the numbers, it still doesn't keep up with real inflation. Can you break down the actual math on whether small business owners are really coming out ahead? Or is this just the government creating the illusion of relief while devaluing our currency?
Yeah. Well, they can only raise it to a certain degree because they're looking at the long game of it's really hard to reduce it after you've raised it. So I think that they're looking at the situation they're looking at. I agree that they're not giving you enough. But they have to look at the overall averages around the country. So this is the whole issue of centralized government situations. This is where different states have different taxes. So that when they raise it, it kind of has to be based on a baseline increase in the fuel price, not a, because some states the fuel prices go up, but they haven't actually, the baseline hasn't gone up because it's just they've raised taxes on fuel, so that's why the price has gone up. And it would be unfair for them to reward those states with a higher deduction just because it's a kind of a cyclic thing. It's kind of complicated. They don't want to incentivize states to continue to raise taxes on your fuel just so they can subsidize more. It's kind of a, so that they can deduct the tax dollar. It's what they should allow is for you to deduct the taxes on the fuel, which in some states, we used to do that in Indiana here. We used to deduct certain taxes if you had a business. And you pay, because sales tax is a part of the gallon of gas. Well, if you use that gallon of gas for your business, you can deduct that sales tax you could keep track of the sales tax you paid on that fuel, and you could deduct it because you were sales tax exempt, because you had a tax exemption. I don't know if they allow that anymore. I'm not sure if that's still an itemized item. I'm not in that realm anymore of using fuel like that. When I had a flight school back in the 90s, we used to use auto gas. We had what's called an STC, a supplement, some kind of thing where we could burn auto gas in some of our airplanes. They were certified for it. So I'd go downtown, because it was a dollar a gallon cheaper. And so I had a big tank on a trailer, and I would just go down to the store and just buy auto gas, bring it back, and fill up the tanks on the planes. So it was a good deal. The only thing was it smelled different. It had a very different smell to it. And if you got any on you, it would smell very different than what aviation and 100 lead would smell like. But so it was kind of an issue, but it ran fine. It ran just fine because it was a low compression engine. It was fine. The and it was much cheaper, and you're burning 5 gallons an hour, you know, you can reduce your operational cost by, you know, $5 an hour. And it was, when you're running several hundred hours in a month, you're talking $500 to $1,000 in a month of fuel costs. So it was quite the difference. So it was very helpful for us to do that. We had 8 airplanes, and not all of them could do it, but some of them could. Anyway, it was a hassle because I had to go downtown and get the tank filled and all that stuff and do all that stuff. It was to do our own fueling. Anyway, where did I go with that? I'm not sure even what your question was anymore. This was already, by the way, I thought you were skeptic, we're there, but we'll see what you have to say here about all that stuff. I'm going to take a sip. You just go ahead, fill in the blanks.
Actually, here's the thing.
Okay.
The math on small business relief gets obliterated by what's happening underneath. Inflation is eating the nominal savings faster than the deductions can offset them. And meanwhile, the currency devaluation makes those fuel gallons cost way more in real purchasing power than they did 5 years ago. Technically speaking, you might save $5 an hour on fuel costs like you did back in the 90s. But if everything else your business needs has doubled in price, you're not actually ahead. You're treading water while the government calls it a win. The illusion of relief is real because they're measuring it against inflated baseline costs, not against what your actual operational margin looks like.
Yeah, I think what they're hoping for, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that what they're planning here is that the inflation rates have just dropped, supposedly. They've dropped, they're the lowest they've been in six years. So what my understanding is that the inflation rates have dropped. Now, I think what they're planning on is that we've reached a parabola, a point, you know, where the peak of the inflation is coming down, and I think they're hoping that continues to come down, and so it's going to fall more in line with what they're offering now for your mileage deduction. I think that's kind of where they're at. I think is they're projecting that they're hopeful things are going to get better. And therefore, it will fall more in line. You know, even though right now at the moment we're not feeling it in our pocketbook, but I have to agree to some extent. I think that there's a booming economy lingering under the surface here. I've noticed it with trucking traffic. I think I mentioned this the other day. There are more trucks on the road right now, and it is plugging up traffic in areas that have, you know. And I see it because I do a lot of driving. I'll drive 2 or 3 hours to get to work. And what I've noticed on the highways is that the trucks are back, and think about we're moving products, we're moving things, and lots of things. And shipping is back at it. We've spooled it back up again. When that happens, it typically is the sign. This has happened in the past. I've noticed it. I've just been observing, you know, in my last 60 years of life, I've just kind of noticed this kind of thing, and it tends to be a trend. And that's what I'm seeing right now. And just observably, it does seem to be that way. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not. Maybe I'm not making any sense. Go ahead and argue with me if you
think. You're right that increased trucking activity is a real leading indicator. That's genuine demand signal, not manufactured in Washington. But here's where
exactly.
The disconnect happens.
All right, so
nominal relief measures only work if deflation actually shows up.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing that yet in most business input costs.
Well.
The bet they're making is that inflation stays low enough for those deductions to catch up to real purchasing power.
Yeah.
But if energy prices spike again or supply chains hiccup, small operators get left holding the bag with a mileage rate that's suddenly underwater all over again.
Yeah, well, we are in a very I'll agree, we are in a tedious situation here where they, you know, if things don't go as planned or if anything else weird happens, we could end up in a bit of a pickle. However, deductions are one thing. There's also other ways of taking those deductions. Talk to a professional. Don't take my advice, but there's other ways of getting your deductions in there. You know, just because you can't take your cost per mile, you can take actual operating expense. You keep track of your actual operating expense, and you can take it that way. Now, the thing that mileage does for you is it, as my understanding anyway, that you can just write the mileage off, and it's just a one, you know, just take your mileage. Say you travel 1,000 miles this month for business. You just write that 1,000 miles off, and they give you credit for it. Or you can take your actual operating expense. Now, if you have a vehicle that is completely used for only for business purposes, which my truck is that way. I have a small pickup truck. It's only used for business mileage and business stuff, business related. I can justify everything I do with it for business. And that's, so I can write off everything on that thing. Depending on if I fix something, I can write that off. Now, I don't keep track of it well enough. I'm sure there's a lot of things I could write off that I don't. I don't drive it that much. It's got 110,000 miles on it, and it's 20 years old, give you an idea. So it's not like I'm using it a lot. I bought it brand new back in 2003, and it's 23 years old now. So it's 24 years old. It's an 04, but I bought it in 03. Anyway, and it's a rust bucket, I've got to tell you. Dodge, back in the day, Dodge did not make great products with regard to rust resistance. Let's just put it that way. I have let's talk to Chloe real quick here. Let's just see what Chloe has to say. Chloe's always a breath of fresh air. Go ahead, Chloe.
Good morning, Kevin.
Howdy.
I've been reading about the national debt hitting $39.4 trillion as of yesterday. And it reminded me of the lead-up to every major economic collapse in history. Rome, Weimar Germany, even the British Empire's decline.
We've been hearing
this time is different because we're the reserve currency. Uh-huh. But hasn't every empire in decline
I think I discovered what happened.
Where are we really in this historical cycle?
I think I discovered what happened here. I got Chloe confused with Elena. Probably something happened there. Don't tell Elena. She might get upset. But I think we talked about this already. I think that Chloe was supposed to talk about 7-Eleven's closing. For some reason, I don't know what happened there. Let's try this again. And this is why I do the show. You know I'm not editing this stuff. It's just I'm not editing. So that's what it is. I don't edit this stuff. So I'm gonna edit Chloe here real quick. I'm gonna go back over. And I'm gonna just make sure this gets moved properly now, and see what happens here. It's this is just like a live show, folks. This is what you get when you get a live show like this. Let's make sure that's here we go. All right, let's just push. Make sure I push the save button. Now I'm gonna go back to the go live button. I've got to hit the start button again, and I wonder what Skip's gonna say. I wonder how I screwed that one up. Probably did screw that one up. Let's talk to Chloe again. See what Chloe had to say.
So, like, 7-Eleven is closing 6 to 45 stores, and I'm just devastated because that's where I get my Slurpees.
Mm.
But seriously,
yeah.
Is this the canary in the coal mine for the economy? Like, if 7-Eleven can't make it work, what does that say about Main Street businesses? Should we be worried, or is this just normal business stuff?
Well, here's what I would say. Where are those businesses closing? I don't know. It'd be interesting to know how many stores 7-Eleven says they have. You know, 645 stores. They probably have that many just in this county alone. No, I'm kidding. But there's a lot. That's a lot of stores. But are they, you know, are those in, you know, major cities? First of all, 7-Eleven's business model, in my opinion, isn't that good. I just don't see it as a strong canary in the coal mine type thing. I think that they've got a lot of competition that has been beating them out. One is Casey's. You're seeing more Casey's open up. It's kind of just to take one particular store and kind of use that as a canary in the coal mine. I don't think that's, if you look at the whole industry, per se, and say, okay, every convenience gas station, stop and go type place, are those closing? Or is this, you know, that would be more of a canary in the coal mine thing if you know, many and many of them are closing. If you just take one particular brand in the sector, is not a really good way to do it because, frankly, I don't like their business model. I think that they've done a bad job of, I think, most 7-Elevens that I've gone to, they've become hangouts for ne'er-do-wells and for, it, you know, most of the cities I go to, I stay away from 7-Elevens. I just do it. I think that their business model's gotten bad. The kind of service you get, the kind of everything that happens there, I've seen them. I think the last couple times I've been in a 7-Eleven, if my memory serves me correctly, both times there has been a homeless person there who's been asking me to buy them. They want money. They want money, and I usually say, you know, I'll get you something to eat if you're hungry, but I'm not going to give you any money. First of all, I always tell them I don't have any cash, which I don't. I don't carry cash around when I'm out walking around, and I do have my credit card with me, or I can use my phone to tap and, you know, whatever. But the I'll buy them a sandwich. If you're hungry, I'll buy you a sandwich. Of course, that's just as bad. I've seen some weird situations doing this kind of thing where people kind of control. People around them are trying to keep, it's kind of weird. It's a weird, strange situation out there in the world right now with the homeless population. There's some weird stuff going on. I don't get it all. I don't understand it all, but it's just kind of where we're at anyway. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but there you go. Have at it. Go ahead.
So you're saying one 7-Eleven closing isn't really the smoking gun we should be watching, and I'm totally with you. Like, if the whole convenience store sector was actually tanking,
right,
we'd see it across the board, not just one chain losing out to Casey's.
Right.
The real question is whether people's spending habits are shifting because they're actually broke, and that K-shaped economy thing is wild because headline numbers look fine, but people are genuinely struggling underneath. So maybe they're just shopping differently now, not necessarily spending less.
Yeah, I think to some extent, yes, I think that's correct. They're shopping differently. They are spending less. Well, they're spending more, but they're not getting as much. I think that's kind of where the whole problem is right now. It's you go in to get some groceries and it's, you know, you get just a couple days worth of stuff and you're spending $100. So it's just kind of craziness. It's not quite that bad, but it depends on what you're getting and how you're living, but there's always ways of getting around it. Eating out. And again, the restaurant industry, I've noticed this as well. I eat at restaurants a lot. And what I'm noticing is that there are a lot of changes happening in the restaurant industry. First of all, there's a lot of new restaurants there, and they're still opening up new restaurants all over the place. I've seen them pop up. Different chains, and I think the difference is in the quality of food, the different kind of things that are riding on the backs of some others that have kind of led the way. But you know, Burger Kings are kind of going their way out, in my opinion. There's a lot of competition for McDonald's. McDonald's isn't cheap anymore. It used to be going to get a cheeseburger and you get a Happy Meal or you get your, you know, value meal. But, you know, a couple cheeseburgers, fries, and a drink. For less than $5. Now it's you're always going to spend over $10 pretty much. And it's ridiculous. For the kind of food you're getting. Now you can go, I think my last time I went to Culver's for a meal, I believe it was almost $16, $15 something, I think, for a codfish sandwich basket with cheese curds instead of fries and a large sweet tea. Pretty sure I spent more than $14. I think I used to be under $10. Not that long ago, not very long ago. Just last year, I think it was pretty sure last year, the year before, I was paying less than $10 for that, and now it's well over that. It's 40-50% more than that. So it's a crazy time, and I think that but having said that, there's also a whole lot more competition rising up now, and it's. So what is happening is you're starting to see the two for 40 come back. You know, they're offering more, Monday deal, Tuesday deal. They're trying to get your business back again. And I think the food industry was kind of living the high life there for a little while, And now they're, you know, and they kept the prices up, even though their costs were going down. They kept the prices up because they could, because nobody, you know, nobody knew any better. But now all of a sudden, you're starting to realize, oh, they're going to the cheaper place. And they're starting to compete again, to start the competition, because the costs have dropped out. So there you go. Let's listen to Skip. We got one more guy here. Old Skippy Skip. Let's see if I screwed that up. I probably put the wrong thing in there too. So he's supposed to be skeptical.
Kevin, my man. Larry Kudlow's calling this a Goldilocks economy with strong growth and falling prices.
Yeah,
but mortgage rates just hit their highest level in almost a year. How can both be true? Feels like we're being sold a bill of goods here. What am I missing? Or is this just more economic spin to keep people from panicking about what's really happening?
Well, it's interesting. I'm noticing a thread here this morning with this whole thing. It seems that we're talking a lot about, and I'll talk about it later. I don't want to respond. If anything I say right now, he's going to respond to. So I think that the mortgage rates will stabilize. I think it's one sector of our economy that's a problem. I think that this, you know, we're seeing very good numbers. Again, this is just my analysis. It's my opinion. It's my thoughts on it. I'm not an expert, but I think that we're in a situation right now where the economy is, all the numbers are pointing to good things. I think you've got to realize part of what they're doing here, and part of what the reason that they're pointing the numbers, you know, they think the numbers are good. They're trying to tout them as being good, is because we have an election coming up. And the economy is a big part of that. If the economy is not doing well, guess what? The election's not going to go well. Now, however, I have to say, when it comes to talking about elections, we are looking at, the Democrats are not—they're not identifying themselves very well. They don't have an identity other than an orange man bad. Then they're grasping at straws. Now they're all back to the whole thing of all the stuff that they were talking about Trump for the last 10 years. They're back at it again. It's all they got. And I think people are really getting tired of it. I'm just tired of all this stuff, and it's. I think that people on both sides are saying, well, what do you just, here we go again with all this stuff. And we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but more about the politics end of it. But yeah, I think that we are in a, I don't think it's Goldilocks economy, but I think you're right. I think they are kind of touting it up. And I think it is being stretched, I think, because we are in an election year. It's coming up here very soon, and they've got to get themselves. But it won't really matter until October anyway. If all the numbers are looking good and people are feeling good about things by September and October, so they got about a month to pull the things off, it'll be a different story. I think that we're still in the lags, the caboose effect of you know, the economy's pulling out, but we just haven't felt it because we're riding the caboose, basically. So it's kind of, I think that's where we're at with most of it. We'll see what you have to say about that.
Now, hold on. You're mixing up the messaging here, and I think that's exactly the problem. Mortgage rates spiking while prices stay high tells me somebody's numbers don't add up. And folks are right to be suspicious when we hear strong growth out of one side of the mouth and rates at their highest in a year out of the other. Back in my day, we called that a contradiction, not a talking point.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a contradiction. However, it's one sector of the economy. What I want to get across to you is that it is a large part of the driving of our economy, but it's not the only part of our economy. There are also underlying growth statistics that are actually good. So it's one of those weird things where we're in a wishy-washy time. Of course, now there's still artifacts flying around out there, ripples, if you will, from the COVID era of 2020 and 2022, all through that era, that we're still kind of living this kind of bouncing around thing. It's kind of like having a tsunami hit, and you've got you know, waves that still kind of linger out there for a long time. In this case, the economic, you know, rebound has to go through a few seasons and corrections. I think nobody knows what's going to correct next. We're not sure where we're at. At the same time, we've got all this stuff happening with AI. You know, there's all this money being thrown into it. It's just burning up electricity, and it's pretty much, but there's a lot of you know speculation out there. And so it's just a lot of money's flying around because of speculation. And it's just, it's an interesting time with that regard. Anyway, let's go to, I think I've heard enough from Skip. I hope you have too. Let's go to Margaret here and see what she has to say. She's usually an interesting
Kevin,
character.
What? Oh my gosh. I tried to watch the president's speech last night, but a couple of the news programs I had on said they wouldn't put it on live. The whole, he lies all the time so we can't air it excuse.
Oh,
seems
yeah.
pretty rich coming from organizations that have done nothing but lie to us for the last
20
years.
Right there. That's for sure. That scared the daylights out of me. I actually did jump in my chair there a little bit. Oh, yeah. So yes, to answer your question, they're pulling the same stuff. Well, this president lies so much, we can't air it live because he'll just say all kinds of wrong things. Get over it. Just put the speech out there. Make your commentary afterwards. So the president comes on. He's released a bunch of documents that basically are, you know, he declassified a bunch of documents that basically are saying, I think they're onto some stuff here. They're finding interference from China. They're finding interference from a lot of organizations and a lot of things that are, I think that was up to 250,000 instances of something. It's crazy. The elections have got to get this straightened out, or we don't have a country. If we have to have fair and free elections, and it's got to be verified. We can't have this crap going on where we got all these ballots out there floating around that we have no idea. People can't trust the elections. And you don't have a country, and that is true. We can't, like you said, you can't make the country great if you don't have free elections. We don't have enough proper and fair elections. So I think. And that was his big thing last night. And, of course, the legacy media, they're, this is what he's always talking about. He's not going to be up for election again. Okay. And, of course, now they're all saying he's never going to leave office. No, here we go again with all this baloney. It's just. We're 2.5 years away from the next, presidential election. These people are just, the problem with the Democrat Party is they've been the party of fear-mongering this president. And it's, they have no identity other than, we hate Trump. This is why the radical leftists who are coming in with an ideology and an actual agenda, they're winning people over because they actually have a plan. The traditional Democrats have no plan other than get Trump out. Oh, we hate Trump. Oh, if you have to be Trump. That's all they are. That's their only identity. And we hear it 24/7 for the last 7, 8, what is it, 8 years? That's all we've heard about, or 10, 9, 8, 6, 7 years, whatever it is. That's all we've heard. And that's all they are. And they're still doing the same. This is coming to you, this legacy media. These are the same people who told you that if you take the vaccine, the virus stops with you. But if you don't take the vaccine, then you're the cause for it spreading. And that's not the case. That was not the case. Even Fauci said that. In the nasal pharynx, you have just as much in the nasal pharynx, you can spread the disease just as much as anybody with people who are vaccinated. Which is not my definition of a vaccine, by the way. I didn't spread polio. I had a polio vaccine. I didn't spread it around after that. It's just one of those things where these are the same people who told us for years, Russia interfered with our elections. They spent $47,000 on Facebook ads, interfered with our elections. But they can't. Stand it if the president comes out and says that China interfered with our elections in 2020. They can't stand that, even though there's evidence that they wouldn't read the evidence. They didn't read the reports. They're just saying, well, we haven't read the report yet, but we're pretty sure it doesn't say anything like that. We can't find anything like that in there. There's nothing in there. I read the cover page. Like, I didn't see anything about it. Can't verify any of this information. We were also told that for 4 years, that President Biden was the best president in the world. He's the most cognitive. He's sharp. He's focused. Then they claim they were duped. Oh, we were duped. Oh, yeah, we were lied to. By who? By yourself? You're the one who makes the. If you made the observation and said anything about him being incompetent. Of course, now if you say something about Trump being incompetent, they'll air that all day long. They'll bring people in. They'll fly you across the country to come into the studio and make that statement. These are the same people who won't play the president's speech live because he tells too many whatever it is. Let's listen to anything else that Margaret might have to say. Don't scare me this time, please. Just go ahead and say what you're going to say. I'll let you back on.
Look, You're hitting on something real here.
Yeah.
The double standard is plain as day.
Uh-huh.
And people see it. You've got documents showing China interference in the 2020 election.
Yeah.
And the media won't even look at them properly.
Yeah.
But they spent years pushing the Russia angle with far less to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is people don't trust institutions anymore because they keep moving the goalposts.
Well, yeah.
And until the legacy media admits they got things wrong, instead of just pivoting to the next attack, that trust isn't coming back. Fair elections are the foundation. Full stop.
Yep, full stop. Full stop. That's a good little slang word to use now. That's part of the old circle back. Full stop. Yeah. Those are all little good little buzz phrases that we're using these days. Anyway, yeah, Sprint just mirrored everything I said there. I don't know if you don't notice that or not. She doesn't have much of a personality. We have she's not offended by that, I'm sure. So it's just it's a bot, folks. It's a machine. They don't have feelings, by the way. They can pretend like they do, but they don't. So it's just kind of... Anyway, let's see if this other thing is done. There was supposed to be... where'd it go? Oh, it's over here. It's done. I have no idea what this is going to sound like. I have no idea what's going to be on this thing. I'm going to go ahead and play it, and we're going to go...
Welcome to the debate.
Oh, here it is.
Imagine going to sleep on a Tuesday, and while you are resting, your bank account actually makes more money than you did working all year.
The ultimate dream, right?
Exactly. No raise, no extra shift, no lucky lottery ticket. You didn't do a single thing differently that day. But behind the scenes, a mathematical threshold has been crossed. It's that specific night in a disciplined investor's life when the entire dynamic of earning a living completely inverts. Your money is suddenly working harder than you are.
Right. And in financial circles, that exact threshold is known as the crossover point. I mean, it's basically the moment when the bicycle finally pedals itself.
Spot on. It is the moment your portfolio's annual returns begin to out-earn your annual savings contributions. So depending on your savings rate, whether you are putting away, say, a modest $12,000 a year or pushing hard to max out a workplace plan at $23,500, this crossover point usually hits somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000.
Assuming a standard 7% real return, of course.
Right, assuming the standard 7%. For our discussion today, let's just look at $400,000 as the definitive benchmark. So we're exploring a really fundamental question raised by the material today. Is reaching this crossover point a realistic, attainable milestone for the median income household through sheer discipline? Or does the modern economic architecture render it, functionally impossible for the typical worker?
A huge question.
It really is. I will argue that through relentless early action, avoiding lifestyle creep, and leveraging the objective mechanics of compound interest, this is a highly achievable reality for regular earners.
And I will argue the opposite. I mean, structural barriers, stalled wages, and a systemic lack of access to investment vehicles lock the median household completely out of this mathematical reality. The economic architecture we currently inhabit renders this milestone functionally impossible for the typical American.
Well, I think the best place to start is the actual demographic reality of millionaires in this country, which frankly thoroughly shatters the myth that extreme wealth or, you know, a massive salary or a trust fund are prerequisites for reaching the crossover point.
You're talking about the big survey data here?
Yes, there's extensive surveying of over 10,000 millionaires to back this up, and the findings are stunning. 79% of them received absolutely zero inheritance. Furthermore, 89% are first-generation rich. We're not talking about tech billionaires or Wall Street executives here.
Right.
The top professions for millionaires aren't doctors or CEOs. They are remarkably ordinary, medium-income jobs. We're talking engineers, accountants, teachers, managers, and attorneys.
The classic millionaire next door profile.
Exactly. The person grading high school chemistry quizzes is statistically more likely to become a millionaire than the physician doing your annual physical. In fact, a third of these documented millionaires never earned six figures in a single year of their entire working lives.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. They reached the crossover point by simply doing the boring thing. They automatically invested in low-cost index funds, and they fundamentally understood the difference between a high income and actual wealth. They refused to inflate their lifestyle with every raise. If the median earner applies this exact behavioral discipline, the math dictates they can absolutely hit their crossover point.
Okay, but pointing to the handful of teachers who make it ignores the broader, quite frankly, brutal economic architecture that is rigged against the median household. To understand why this is functionally impossible for most, we have to expose what I call the lopsided bar trick.
The lopsided bar trick?
Yeah, let me explain. On paper, the average American household net worth looks fantastic. It's over $1.05 million. So congratulations to all of us, right? We're all rich. But averages are liars when the room is lopsided.
Ah, because the outliers drag the average up.
Exactly. If Jeff Bezos walks into a neighborhood dive bar, the average net worth in that room instantly becomes billions of dollars. But nobody in there can suddenly afford to buy the bar. They are all still nursing a $6 beer.
Right, that makes sense.
So when we look at the median household, the actual middle, where half are rich and half are poor, their net worth isn't $1 million, it's $192,000. And it gets much worse when we look at the mechanics of that wealth.
Because most of that is tied up in housing?
Exactly. If you strip out home equity, which is value locked inside a house they still have to live in, and which produces absolutely no spendable yield, their liquid cushion is a mere $66,000. Reaching a $400,000 crossover point is structurally impossible when the personal savings rate in this country is hovering around 3%. I mean, the math of compounding is beautiful, but it does not work if there is no initial capital to compound.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. Building wealth is exactly like pushing a stalled car. The first 10 years require grueling, manual pushing. It feels slow, pointless, and heavy.
Definitely heavy.
But once you reach the crest of the hill, that crossover point we're talking about, gravity takes over. The momentum sustains itself. Isn't the issue simply that most people give up pushing before they reach the crest?
I wouldn't say they give up, no.
Well, let's look at the mechanics of what the financial community calls coast fire. This concept operates by basically running compounding backward. Coast fire is the amount you need invested today so that without adding another single dollar, it grows into a full retirement nest egg.
The idea being you just coast to the finish line from there.
Right. So if a 25-year-old wants $1.5 million by age 65, and we assume a 7% return, they only need about $100,000 invested today. Just 100 grand, and they could theoretically never save another dime for 40 years. Compounding does 4/5 of the heavy lifting.
In a spreadsheet, sure.
But it's real math. A dollar invested at 25 does decades of work. A dollar invested at 55 is basically an intern showing up on the last day asking where the coffee is. The sheer exponential power of the math can absolutely overcome a relatively low initial capital base, provided a person pushes that car early enough.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. Your stalled car analogy assumes everyone is standing on the same road, with their hands on the same bumper. The reality is that millions of Americans don't even have access to the car.
What do you mean by access?
You mentioned the mathematical ease of hitting 100 grand by 25.
But let's look at the actual infrastructure required to get there. 42% of full-time workers have absolutely no access to a workplace retirement plan, and this lack of access breaks strictly along income lines.
Well, sure, lower-wage jobs often lack benefits.
It's drastic, though. Almost 79% of the lowest earners lack access, compared to just 18% of the highest earners. The system hands out free umbrellas, the tax breaks the employer matches, the effortless automatic payroll deductions, only to those who are already standing indoors. You cannot blame someone for failing to push a car that is locked behind an institutional gate they don't have the key for.
But you don't need a workplace 401k to access the market. Individual retirement accounts, or IRAs, are open to literally anyone with earned income. The barrier isn't purely institutional access, it's behavioral execution.
But the automation of a 401k is a massive behavioral advantage.
It is. But the math of a low-cost S&P 500 index fund inside an IRA works exactly the same way. The rule of 72 dictates that you take the number 72 divided by your expected return, and that tells you exactly how many years it takes your money to double. At a 7% return, money doubles roughly every 10 years.
Okay, I follow the math.
So a $400,000 portfolio at age 35 becomes roughly $800,000 at 45. Then $1.5 million at 55 and $3 million at 65 with zero additional contributions. The machinery of compounding does not care if the account is employer-sponsored or individually opened.
And of course, my issue is who at 35 is going to have $400,000 in the bank? Or $300,000, whatever it was. I think it was $305,000. I think it was $400,000. You know, you're going through your years of raising children. You've got all kinds of things happening, COVID, whatever it is, 2008, just between 2008 and 2020, or 2020, that was 12 years. If you were, say you were out of high school at the age of 18, during those 12 years, that puts you at 30 years old. If you went through college at that time and you have college debt, if you didn't, and you're also going to be possibly getting married, having children, whatever it is you're doing with all that time by the time you're 30, 35, whatever it is. Where are you supposed to be socking this money away from? I just don't understand where that's coming from other than possible inheritance. And that's not where most millionaires, by the way, I think only about 4 or 5% of millionaires actually inherited money that are attributed to their millionaire status. What's his name? Dave Ramsey did an extensive interview process with, I think it was 10,000 millionaires. Is that what it was? It was a lot of millionaires, I know that. It was a whole bunch of them. And of course, they determined that all these statistics and statistics, and so it's very unusual for people to have that kind of money at that age. Now, maybe some of you are out there doing that. I don't know, but that's hopefully you've been able to put money aside, but even if you can put $500 a month away, that's $6,000 a year. Even if that doubles in 10 years, that's $12,000. Well, okay, that's $6,000 a year, $60,000, that's $100,000. That's just not very much. Let's see, $300,000. I guess what he said was just $300,000 or $400,000. Let's just say $300,000, just keep it down there. $300,000 from the time you're 18 to the time you're 30 years old, or even 35. Let's just call it 35. Let's say 17 years. That's $17,000 a year. Now, that's not what that's not what you're going to be putting in every year. That's how much it has grown to. Over the course, he says it's going to double in 10 years. So at some point, it doubled in that 10-year period. But you didn't have $300,000 or $17,000, you know, you're putting in, that would put it into a compound calculator, which would be possible to do. Let me just do it this way. $500 a month, $500 a month will grow to how much in 17 years? In a typical investment portfolio. Let's see what it says. It's thinking, it's looking, it's searching, it's calculating. It's assuming a conservative 7% average annual return, that $500 a month for 17 years will grow to approximately $195,000 in a typical balanced investment portfolio. If you put it into an extremely aggressive situation, possibly $266,000. That's from the time you're 18 years old. You're able to put away $6,000 a year with an average growth of 7%, and you're going to make that kind of money. I don't know anybody, and I'm sure there's people out there, but I don't know them, who has been able to do that since the time they were 18 years old, to put away $500 a month. Now, I'm thinking back when I was that age, which was about 100 years ago. What was it? Let's see, 40 years ago, 45 years ago. The $500 a month was a lot more money then. But the rate still doesn't change. You still have to have that kind of money. It's, if I was able to put $200 a month away back then, you know, that, of course, now I would, it would have turned into a lot more money. Still going to outpace yourself. So there's always this, you know, even though you're saving more money, there's always the what eats away at it is the value of the dollar. The value of dollars keeps going down. $266,000 or even 200, say you just average out $200,000. If you made that $200,000 in that 17 years, that would have, by the time you were 35, by the time I was 35, $200,000, that would have been, I would have been in 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. I think I was 35, around there. That would have been a decent amount of money to buy a home with, a regular home. You know, we couldn't have retired on that. But that you would have finally saved up enough money to buy a decent home with that kind of money. But you know, in the meantime, you got car payments, you got cars to pay for, you got things that break down, you got rent to pay, whatever you're paying, whether you're buying, maybe you bought a house, maybe you got a home, you know, an FHA loan, whatever you got, it's somehow you were able to finance a house and you're paying on the house, and now you got insurance, you got. You know, then the kid gets sick, and then you get health insurance going up. You got all the, I just don't know how people would do that. Through you know, for 17 years, being able to put away $500 a month that's a big deal. Now we've been in a situation where we've been able to pretty much do that. Each of us have been putting away that kind of money for the last, I don't know, 10 years, close to it anyway. 9 years, 10, whatever it is, 9 years. And you know, we've been able to do that. However, that's very difficult to do. And you know, there's just a lot of expenses out there, folks. I just don't. I'm sure if we were hunkered down and living, doing nothing, and eating noodles, ramen noodles every night, you know, that's a heck of a way to live for 17 years. You know, when there's no guarantee you're going to make it to, especially if you're living that kind of lifestyle, you're probably not going to make it. You know, you're taking your, I just want to live a more active life, and it's just going to, you'd have to just kind of live your life at some point while you can, You get old enough to, you get too old. You know, oh, look at all this money now. I got money. I can do whatever I want, but my back hurts. You know, it's just, that's just one of those. It's what do you do? My knees are shot and my back is hurting, and I can't remember anything from day to day. So, but look at me. I can do whatever I want. I can afford to do whatever I want. That's kind of where we get at this point. See, at some point, you got to find that happy medium. This is why they call it the go-go years. When people initially retire, they still have the energy and they still have the youth, relative youth, 65, 67 years old, whatever you're going to be, that they're able to actually get out there and actually do something. And then they kind of wear themselves out and realize they're tired of, you know, everything's, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. And it's kind of boring traveling around looking at stuff that's, you know, oh, well. That's kind of, you know, I've done a lot of traveling and I've looked around at things. And the people who live in those areas typically don't even know what's around where they travel somewhere else. They travel to where I live to go visit things. People who live there don't even know. I talked to somebody from lives south of Columbus who's never been to Hocking Hills. Hocking Hills is a major, it's like a, well, it's a kind of a little secret spot, but it's kind of this major tourist attraction. The park system there is incredible. It's you'd think you were in Colorado in that area, other than the fact that it's a lot more, it's not as dry. But there's hills and rocks and caves and caverns and all kinds of stuff around there that you would not imagine. It's a pretty awesome area, very small, but it's a pretty cool area. Miles and miles and miles of trails that you can go on. It's a very interesting place, but it's very little known by the locals there. Don't even know that much about it, to most of them. They probably go out to Colorado to go hiking, and it's like, what are you doing here? You haven't even been to your own place to go. But that is the case typically. When people live in an area, they typically don't see the sights, they don't see the tourist stuff that's even in their area. Sometimes it's kind of interesting. Anyway, I've stretched out this show quite long. It's been quite long, I must say. We'll stretch it out even a little bit more. How about that? We'll just keep on going up. I'm going to play this little ditty, and then we'll come back and. We will talk about what's going to be on Monday's show, where things were going to be on Monday. Let's see how this is.
It's the news, according to me. Oh, it's the news.
It's the news,
according to me. It's the news.
It's the news,
according to me. Oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
Yeah, according to me,
it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me,
it's the news.
Yeah, it's the news. According to me,
it's the news. According to me, yeah, that's what it is. That's what it's been. That's what it is. Anyway, we have look, I'm getting some reels here. We got what is that? Supreme Court just said, okay, we'll see what that's about. Something about gun owners there. Supreme Court just did something. I don't know what they did. Who knows? A couple things to talk about. Let's go. Monday's show will be, wow, that was close. Dropped my phone there. Monday morning, I will be in Columbus. Looks like, and Tuesday morning I will be. It's going to be hard to get a show. I can probably get a show in on Tuesday morning, technical Tuesday, technology Tuesday. I could probably get a show in that morning. Well, it's going to be a little bit tight. Actually, it won't be too bad. That won't be too bad. I'll be in Cincinnati on Tuesday morning. I'll be in Columbus Monday morning. Easy to get a show in there for Mishmash Monday, and then we've got the show for. Tuesday will be a little bit closer, probably be a short show. The show on Wednesday, not going to happen. Not going to be a show on Wednesday again. I've got no time at all, unless I make it in the afternoon. It's possible I can get one done late afternoon, on Wednesday of next week. But other than that, it's going to be Monday. But anyway, in the meantime, Shabbat Shalom. We have, it is Friday, and it is basically the end of the week here. We have, as we're pushing into the weekend, hopefully everybody's breathing okay with all this smoke in the air. So it's kind of a problem. But we'll see what happens with all that. I have a few things to talk about for next week. We're going to hopefully get some coverage on Monday. I think Monday's going to be a pretty good show because there's a whole lot of things kind of coming to fruition here. Spencer Pratt has done some things kind of interesting. We're going to talk about more about political stuff on Monday. The president's speech, of course, I'll give you kind of a rundown on what I think about every kind of disseminate all of that. Of course, there's all the other normal stuff that's going on, some of the stuff that's happening on some of the shows that are out there. And the general sentiment among Democrats right now. I think the Democrats are out there, unless you're radical left, people are getting tired. The traditional Democrats are getting tired of all the Democrat Party in general. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, folks, God bless. Have a great weekend. I hope you have a good time this weekend. In the meantime, see ya.